Welcome to episode 24 of the Views from 314 Feet podcast. My name is Randy Wilkins, and as always, I'm joined by Yankees beat reporter from The Athletic, Chris Kirshner. Chris, how are you?
Doing well here in Philadelphia, the day after the trade deadline. Exciting times in Yankee land, new faces, new toys for Yankees fans to get upset about. So excited to dive in.
I'm currently at Wake Forest University. That's why I'm in the like very white-walled, white closet room right now. So
nice.
I'm on a campus apartment down here. So I also drove like 9.5 hours to get down here. So I'm still like kind of out of it. But we're here.
We're here.
Chris is in Philly with the Yankees. I'm in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, trying to stay awake. So let's just jump right into it because there's a lot going on. As you mentioned, the trade deadline passed. The Yankees made three moves: Jazz Chisholm Jr., Mark Leiter Jr., and how do you pronounce his first name?
Eniel
De Los Santos from the Padres. So one position player who is already making a big impact, as everyone that's listening is well aware of, and two relievers that bring in some swing and miss. And we can talk about the specific acquisitions that the Yankees have made, but I also think it's important to talk about them in the larger context of how this entire trade deadline went down, because there's been such a strong reaction to the Yankees' deadline moves that I think is like begging for context here, because it's not just what the Yankees did, but it was how the industry kind of treated the whole thing collectively. So I know that you wrote a piece that I think came out this morning that detailed your thoughts. So please share them with our audience.
I mean, I think a lot of fans were upset with how the deadline went down. But when you look at just the landscape in general, I mean, not many game changers ended up getting traded. I think Jack Flaherty, Isak Paredes, you know, if you want to put Randy Arozarena in there, when he's on, he's one of the better hitters in the league. There just weren't many like really, really extraordinary players who ended up getting traded. Chisholm has certainly started off hot, basically hotter than you can possibly be. He's hit 4 home runs. Who knows if he hits another one in Wednesday's game. We're recording this before Wednesday's game. But he's been basically a league average hitter over the past couple of seasons. Just hasn't really had consistency. But when you look at what the Yankees did, they essentially replaced Chisholm with they replaced DJ LeMahieu with Chisholm, which is by far an upgrade. I don't think anyone can deny that. And Boone today said, he looks at Jazz as basically his everyday third baseman at this point, which I think is great news for the Yankees, because DJ cannot play anymore. He's not an everyday player. It is what it is. And then you get two, swing and miss relievers. Mark Leiter's certainly the better option between him and De Los Santos. Leiter ranks in the 98th percentile in both whiff and strikeout rates. He's had a really good year. I know some fans look at reliever ERA and say to themselves, why did this team trade for a guy with a 4.2 ERA? But, reliever ERA, because they don't pitch much, their ERAs can fluctuate very quickly. But if you look at all of his advanced metrics, he's unquestionably been one of the best relievers. I think the Yankees did well there. They gave up Jack Neely. I definitely think Neely could have been an option at some point for the Yankees, but you have to give up something to get something. And the Yankees decided that they would rather have an established reliever over a rookie reliever who has moved up quickly in the system. Sometimes it works out. Jabba Chamberlain obviously is a great example. It worked out. sometimes it doesn't work out when, you know, you have a rookie come up and you have to rely on him in critical spots. So I think the Yankees did fine for that trade. De Los Santos, if it was me running the team, I probably would have chosen a different option. Not the greatest reliever. Yes, he has high strikeout numbers, but basically all of his other numbers are bad. You hope that Matt Blake can fix something in his arsenal. His fastball is not good. His slider is. I would assume that the Yankees are going to have him throw his slider more often to get better results. But on a whole, I think the Yankees did fine. You know, I think, was it, you know, a slam dunk home run? No. But they filled some needs. The other teams in the American League didn't really improve that much. You know, the Orioles made a lot of trades, but, like, I'm not blown away by any of the moves. I think Zach Eflin is a good starter. He's serviceable. Maybe they unlock something with Trevor Rogers. They got two Phillies relievers who were struggling in Soto and Dominguez, Sir Anthony Dominguez and Gregory Soto. They got Eloy Jimenez, who's never healthy. I'm not blown away by their moves. The Astros completely overpaid for Yusei Kikuchi. They needed a starting pitcher. They got it. They got Caleb Ferguson. Obviously, he's not doing anything for the Astros. You know, no team in the American League separated themselves, and the Yankees had a deal in place for Jack Flaherty. They backed out because of medical concerns. Can you say the Yankees should have just done it anyway? It's only, you know, a couple months left in the season. Is it worth the risk of trading one of your top prospects? I don't know. I think an argument can be made either way. So, you know, if they got Flaherty, obviously it would have certainly improved the roster tremendously. But, you know, it seemed like they had the Frankie Montas deal in their heads before they fully executed the deal. I don't know if you can fault the Yankees for that. The Dodgers obviously felt the risk was worth it. The Yankees felt otherwise, and other teams probably felt similarly to the Yankees. So ultimately, they don't get the starter. I think that's one area that they missed on. I think they do need a starter, but at this point, they have to roll with what they have.
Yeah, I mean, I thought for what they needed, given the context of the deadline, I thought they did more than fine. I mean, I think Leiter is a sneaky, under-the-radar, really strong move. He addresses everything that they needed out of the bullpen. So I think that was a really strong move, and Chisholm has obviously performed well so far. And I think part of the thing here is he's embracing the fact that he's on a title contender. And I won't even say like the bright lights and all of those things. I think it strictly comes down to a good player that's now in a situation where there's organizational structure and there's clubhouse structure. There's clear leadership. There are veterans there, and he's able to just go play now. Like, he's not going to be the main emphasis of attack from other teams. You know, he can back up Judge and Soto, and he could just go play and be athletic and be energetic and provide those things that the Yankees, quite frankly, were missing for a while. So I know when he was in Miami, that's for obvious reasons, I kind of have an idea of like how Miami was operating and how like unstructured and kind of like all over the place that organization as a whole is. So to go from that situation to a place like the Yankees, where it's just not just like the attitude stuff, but just organizationally, they have things buttoned up way more than Miami does, I think makes a huge difference. And I think he's able to just go play now. So I know you had mentioned Harrison Bader, but I think Jazz Chisholm is just a better player than Harrison Bader to begin with. I think he's just a better major leaguer than him. But I also think part of it too is Jazz is going to be able, hopefully, for a sustained run of time while he's a Yankee, to like really settle in and embrace the fact that he's in a quite frankly, better situation. And there's leadership there. I mean, we a lot of us know about the comments that he made about former teammates that had moved on. And I know a lot of people focus on those specific comments, but I think he was saying something larger about the organization that he was craving. And it was very clear that he was looking for certain things so that he could excel. And I think he's found that with the Yankees and he's taking advantage of it. Do I think he's going to hit a home run every game, two home runs every game? No. I think he's going to cool down, obviously, because again, he's doing something that's unsustainable. But I think in finding kind of a non-traditional third baseman, the Yankees made out pretty well. And he's looked good at third so far. Super small sample size, obviously, but it could have been a disaster, like literally from the first play that he had. And he looks super athletic there. You know, I think just some of the plays he's been able to make have been like really impressive for a guy who's never done it before.
I totally agree. And the first day that he played third base here in Philadelphia, I was watching him in warmups and he did not look good at all. I was like, oh man, this is going to be a disaster. Yeah. And then he gets in the game and he looked like he had played third base numerous times in his career. So, you know, again, as you mentioned, it is a small sample size. So I think fans definitely need to temper their expectations. And you mentioned Harrison Bader. You know, I had tweeted out on Tuesday night that, you know, a lot of fans were crowning Harrison Bader as the next Mickey Mantle in the playoffs because he hit four home runs. And, you know, when you start this hot, you definitely can lead people to think like, oh, this is just going to be the expectation. Not to say he's hitting home runs every game, but being, you know, a top five hitter, which is what he has looked in the past couple of games. Like, you know, it's possible that being in a lineup with this talent could unlock him even more than what he experienced in Miami, just because he my microphone went out, but he didn't have any, you know, he didn't have much major league talent in Miami. And, you know, he gets to hit around Aaron Judge, Juan Soto, Giancarlo Stanton, you know, Glaber, however you feel about him. There's just more talent in this Yankees lineup, and pitchers are going to have to attack him differently than what they did in Miami. In Miami, you know, essentially if you get Jazz out, there's just not much around in Miami's order. So, you know, pitchers were certainly pitching him like he was Aaron Judge because there's no one else in that lineup. So I do think that being on a better team can unlock him even more. You know, a lot of people think he is a star because he was on the cover of MLB The Show. Yeah, he hasn't performed like a star. Right. But if he is even a slightly above league average bat and he's fine defensively, I think that's a huge win for the Yankees, just given that they're playing DJ LeMahieu every day and they had no plans to move off of him if this deal didn't come through. Like, we would have been seeing DJ every day or Oswaldo. And Oswaldo, you know, he's fine, but again, he's not anything to write home about. So, you know, I think just in that regard, if Jazz is a slightly above league average bat, he's fine defensively. I think it's a win for the Yankees. You know, they traded away Augustin Ramirez, great hitter in the minors, but there's just nowhere to play him on this roster. Like, he didn't have a place on the Yankees because Austin Wells is the catcher of the future. Ben Rice is at first base. They probably could upgrade first base if they wanted to in the offseason. And Ramirez is not good defensively at first base. You know, it's certainly possible that he could end up being a really good player for Miami or whoever if they decide to trade him in the future. But I think it's worth the risk, especially for someone who can impact not only this year, but, you know, moving forward as well. He's under team control for two more seasons. I would be so stunned if he wasn't the second baseman next year, because I don't think Gleyber Torres is coming back. So you have a cost-controlled middle infielder for the next two seasons in Jazz. And again, being on a better team, being in an organization that has better structure may, you know, have him become the player that I think many fans and people in the game expected him to be.
Yeah, I mean, for this year specifically, the bar, quite frankly, is on the ground for Jazz. I mean, anything he does is probably going to be better than what they were getting at third base all season. So, you know, I don't think that there's anything. Jazz would have to be incredibly awful from this day forward, the rest of the year, for him not to be an upgrade on what they've already had. And even defensively, again, short sample size, he's making plays that I'm not sure Oswaldo and DJ can make at this point. So, I think it was a really good move when it happened, but I think the way that it's playing out early on can give a glimpse of how impactful he can be in a supplementary role. And that's what they needed. Essentially, they have the two big players, and they have the talent to win the World Series, but it need to play up to it. And I think what the deadline needed to be was to get these other pieces to surround the guys that they already have. But regardless of who they brought in, the core guys need to play better. And that was part of the issue during this like really bad stretch, where you can basically pick a name out of the hat outside of Judge and Soto and say, this guy's not playing well enough. And then Wells stepped up, Glaber's hitting, Ben Rice is starting to get some results back that were similar to when he first came up. The starting pitching looks like it's starting to get back to where it was a little bit. I thought that Hill was really good against Philly. Rodon has been fantastic his last couple of starts. There's the issue with Cole, but that might just be related to his stomach bug and still trying to get into like elite game shape for someone at his level who's playing catch up the entire time. But I think they did well at the deadline, given the context. I mean, there's no big time player that got moved, you know, like at an elite game changer level. And I just think the prices were insane. Like what the Padres gave up for Jason Adam and Tanner Scott was significant. You know, that came at a high price. I think they did exceptionally well for themselves for this year, but they paid a lot. The Kikuchi trade, I kind of feel both ways, because Dana Brown's background is as a scout, so I kind of trust his eye. But like by industry standards, that was a huge overpay. You can go look at all these deals and see how like expensive they were. And then when you start putting all those pieces together, if you're looking at it from a Yankees fan perspective, like the Yankees did pretty well, you know, considering all the factors that go into it. And like you said, I don't think any team got like significantly better. I thought Seattle could have done more and they didn't. I think getting a Rosarena was fine, but like, it's not like they got a big bat, which is what they needed. I think Cleveland just emphasized their commitment to platoon bats by getting Lane Thomas, and Baltimore did whatever. The Jimenez trade was like, what is this? Like, I don't even understand why you're making this deal. Eflin's fine. You know, Rogers is fine. The relievers were okay. I mean, there's nothing that, if we're speaking about the larger context of things, that made me more concerned about the Yankees' ability to get to the World Series than I did prior to the deadline. And we talked about it, that the trade deadline was going to be kind of a line in the sand for these teams. And it feels like the Yankees on the aggregate might have put themselves ahead slightly, depending on how things play out, compared to other teams, just because I don't think the other teams did enough. Like, certainly Baltimore didn't do enough, in my opinion. I mean, they needed a big time starter. They didn't get him. They needed like really effective bullpen arms, like someone like a Tanner Scott. They didn't get that guy. They could have gone after Leiter. They didn't get Leiter. I think Leiter would have really helped them out, but instead the Yankees get him. So, I mean, was it a like, amazing deadline? No, but I don't think it was an amazing deadline for anybody really outside of maybe San Diego and teams that
the Dodgers. I would say the Dodgers did well.
And the Dodgers. I think the Dodgers because of Flaherty, not because of Edmund, though. I mean, I don't.
Yeah, I mean, I think Rosario is a fine player. I mean, they need.
I'm not a Rosario fan. I don't think he's. A good player at all.
I think he's fine. Is he going to, you know, be a game changer for them? No, but I think he's fine. I think Edmund, if healthy, can be fine. I think they're solid players, but you know, getting Jack Flaherty definitely helps. They got Michael Kopech to add to their bullpen. Again, fine. Again, all these moves are just fine in my opinion. I think Flaherty was the only like true game changer for like how we can evaluate teams and like how they did at the deadline. And the Dodgers took a risk with his health situation, but they have the talent in the minor league in their minor league system to do that. For the Yankees, you know, one point I did want to make with the trade deadline as a whole is because the league has essentially said you can win 85 games in the regular season, and if you get in as a wild card team, you can still make it to the World Series and end up winning. We saw that last year with the Diamondbacks and the Rangers. I don't think any team, I don't think any fan would have said, oh yeah, those are two teams who are going to be in the World Series come October. A few years ago, the Braves in 21, they were basically, I think they were under 500. They make a few moves and they end up winning the World Series. You know, in the expanded playoff era, I think team strategies can no longer be that, oh yeah, we'll just fill all of our holes at the trade deadline and be ready to roll come October. I think most GMs are going to have to get all of their roster situated prior to the start of the season rather than waiting until July. One, because so many teams think they have a chance for the playoffs. And again, like I said, in this era, you get in the playoffs, who knows what happens. You get hot, you find yourself in the World Series, and you can end up winning. And there just weren't many sellers this year. I think that's going to continue in this expanded playoff era. A lot of teams are going to feel like they have a chance of getting in the playoffs, and the teams that are sellers are going to make out like bandits because there just isn't much to trade. So that's why you see guys like Kikuchi getting, you know, basically three top prospects from Houston, and Tanner Scott, a reliever who has a couple months left of team control, getting like four really good prospects from the Padres. Like, I think that, I don't think that is an anomaly. I think that's going to continue for the years to come in this era where there's three playoff teams in each league. Three wildcard teams in each league. I think that's going to continue, and I think it's going to change how teams think about building their rosters up.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I think the Marlins were the big winner of the trade deadline, actually. I mean, they completely restocked their system with a couple moves. I mean, the trade with Baltimore, the trade with San Diego, and the trade with the Yankees has basically elevated their system, I would say, top five. At the least at this point, just with the amount of like quality inventory they brought in from those moves. So, and I think to your point, a team like San Diego, even though they paid like a high price, is putting themselves in a position to be one of those teams as the season goes on and potentially gets a playoff spot. Because if they can kind of figure out, I mean, if Darvish comes back and they hit a little bit, and it looks like they're hitting now. They'll have a lockdown bullpen in the playoffs. I mean, they have a filthy bullpen now. So they're one of those teams that I think, you know, when an aggressive GM that's willing to just say, here are these prospects, we're going for it. You know, I think they're the team out of everybody that's in that kind of like Diamondbacks, like Rangers range.
I agree.
Has just said, we know that we can, if we get to the playoffs, we can play that game. So That's why, to me, they had a really good deadline, because I think they're playing it exactly how you're describing it. And I think that I do think the Yankees did that as well, not to that extent, just because, you know, they didn't fully address like their biggest needs. But I do think the lighter move is a really strong move and is under the radar because a lot of people weren't talking about him. Jazz is already making an impact and he doesn't need to be the guy. But also think if De Los Santos can really use his slider effectively, then you have another guy. You know what I mean? So I think the Yankees have put themselves in a position to do that as well. So, yeah, I mean, I thought the deadline was good for the Yankees, given the context of what was going on. And they now just have to hope that their guys play well for the rest of the season, which was going to be the case regardless, even if they got Flaherty. Yeah. Yep. And it was going to be the same issue. So guys got to step up.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a perfect point to make, is that it would have been a miracle to address all the needs that the Yankees have. You know, sometimes you just need your players that you have on your current roster outside of trades perform to their level of expectancy. And that's what the Yankees are going to have to do. You know, Marcus Stroman is paid to be, you know, one of your top starters. He hasn't pitched like that. Nestor Cortes is expected to be one of your top starters. He hasn't pitched like that. You know, Luis Gil has workload concerns. Who knows what you're getting on a start-to-start basis with Carlos. And Garrett obviously is dealing with this fatigue issue. Who knows if it's going to be anything serious. You know, he's planning on pitching this weekend, but again, with someone who was on the injured list for 2+ months and now he's dealing with fatigue issues, to me, I think there's at least some concern. You know, the Yankees are saying otherwise, but, you know, he did miss time with this issue with the elbow, and now he's not recovering well. I don't know. It could be nothing. It could be the stomach bug, but it is something to keep note of. And also, when he has pitched, he really hasn't performed that well.
Right. Right.
So I do think the Yankees, like, if I was to say, like, they missed in an area, it would have been, like, adding a starting pitcher. Because, you know, Clark Schmidt is going to come back at some point. Who knows what you're getting in Clark? He's missed 2+ months. He's going to miss 2+ months. And anytime a player comes back from injury, you just don't know. It's always a risk. So that is the one area where I feel like they could have addressed and didn't. Because, you know, you shouldn't have to rely on guys like Cody Poteet and Will Warren, who I thought pitched fine in his major league debut. You know, this team has World Series aspirations. So even getting like a serviceable starter, I feel like could have been something that the Yankees chose to do. And again, it's important to note that they were targeting a top-of-the-line starter in Flaherty, but they backed out because of the health concern. So it's not like, you know, Cashman is going to talk here this morning in a little while, but, you know, I am curious to know, like, how he thinks of the starting pitching depth that he has, because obviously he can't be thrilled with it if he was targeting someone at the top of the rotation of what the Yankees, you know, would have had going into October. It probably would have been Cole Flaherty as your games 1 and 2 starters. So I am interested to hear what he has to say about how he thinks the starting pitching has performed.
Yeah. And to, before we get to break, I mean, Chris is reporting it. Ken Rosenthal is reporting it. I'm not an insider or journalist, but, I'm also saying that there was a deal in place, wink, wink. So, yeah, I mean, they wanted Flaherty and it was going to happen until the medical stage. So, I mean, they tried. You know, if they're uncomfortable with the health, you can't really – I mean, I guess, like you said, I can see it both ways, but it's – I would have liked Jack to be here for personal reasons. That's my guy. But – I get it from an organizational standpoint. You have to be responsible to the franchise and you have to like make certain decisions if you're being told that the medical side of it is iffy. So I get it. So speaking of playing well, looks like the Yankees have done that. And we will get into that conversation right after this break. And we're back. It's Randy. It's Chris. Chris has to go to the Brian Cashman media availability soon. So I'll finish out the podcast with the mailbag later on, just so everybody has a heads up. And if they don't want to hear me answer your questions, they could get out of it as soon as the segment is over. So I'm giving you guys a heads up. But yeah, before we went to break, we briefly mentioned that the Yankees are starting to play better. They won the series in Boston. They've now won the series in Philly, two of the better teams in the league. And the Yankees have, since that game Friday night in Boston, that they had a chance to win as well, they've certainly looked better over the last couple of games. So what are your impressions of the Yankees over the last couple of games?
Well, I mean, they're hitting, so that is one thing. They scored a bunch of runs in Boston. They're scoring against Philly, and Philly has arguably the best pitching staff in all of baseball. And, you know, they're slugging. They're just doing everything right offensively in these past few games. Again, I don't know if that's going to continue or anything like that, but it is encouraging that they're hitting as well as they have. You mentioned it before, but you know, the starting pitching has been better with Luis Gil and Carlos in particular. Those guys have done really well. I'm very curious to see how Nestor looks against the Phillies lineup. Pitching Wednesday afternoon, if you're listening to this at some point in the future. Very curious to see how he looks, because in the past few outings, he really hasn't performed well at all. For the most part, the bullpen is held up. Guys are making plays in the field. Like, they're playing like a really, really good team right now. Right. Dare I say a corner has been turned? I don't know. I don't know if we've reached the corner yet, but it is encouraging to see them play well, considering just how terribly they have played for the past like 7 weeks or so. It is encouraging that they've beat Boston, who's in the playoff race, and then Philly, who's the best team in the National League. And also Tuesday's game was just a really good, resilient win, because they could have easily folded at any point in Tuesday's game, and they didn't. They had a rookie starter and Will Warren on the mound. Warren, again, pitched fine. He wasn't like great by any means. He gave up a mistake to Austin Hayes that found the seats for a 3-run homer. Yankees could have just packed it in at that point, but they didn't. Jazz hits a 3-run homer to give them a lead. Clay Holmes falters in the ninth, blows the save. Mark Leiter comes in fresh off the airplane, throws a scoreless inning. Michael Tonkin has two really good innings and gets the save. I mean, it was a really great win. I think it might have been the best win of the season for the Yankees, honestly, just with everything that went on in the game. But yeah, they're playing well. We'll see if it continues. With baseball, it's such a small sample size to say corners have been turned or anything like that. Right. All I can say is they're playing well. We will see if it continues.
Yeah, a couple of things for me. The most important thing is that they started slugging again. I mean, that's been the difference offensively. Like, they're hitting the crap out of the ball again. And there's so many conversations with so many different people talking about contact approach, and they needed to do this and they have to do that. And it's like, no, they're the Yankees. Like, that is historically their profile. That's how they're built. That's has won them 27 championships. They hit the crap out of the ball better than most franchises do. So they have to get back to who they are. And as soon as they do that, they've been successful. Ben Rice hitting the ball really hard, whether the results were there or not. I mean, he was striking out a little bit more than you would probably like, but he was still having good at-bats. And when he did make contact, it was loud contact. Austin Wells has taken that leap, apparently, and that comes with slugging the ball. Volpe is finally back to hitting the ball hard. Like, a lot of his contact is high-quality good, impactful, like, contact now, and you can see the difference. Like, he's a better hitter now, right now, than he was for the last, like, 2 months or whatever. Chisholm, obviously, with his power run right now. I mean, you just see it up and down the lineup. And I don't know what changed, but it's nice to see that they're finally driving the ball. And I think that that's made a huge difference because they can just score runs immediately. I mean, that's what you need to do. And as you mentioned, they're facing a great pitching staff and they've been beating them up. And it's all come from driving the ball. So that needs to continue, obviously. I am curious about, you know, the whole like turning the corner thing, because I specifically have been like very critical on how they handle adversity. But I do think it's interesting that some of the new guys, or like relatively new guys, are the ones that really contributed to the win last night. And I agree. I think if it wasn't their best win, it was a top three win for them this season. But like a lot of the contribution came from guys that like had nothing to do with this team for not that long. You know, Jazz obviously just got here. He was like their best hitter yesterday, I would say. Leiter came in and had a big outing given the situation. And Tonkin hasn't been around that long, but like really stepped up. And not to say that the other guys on the team didn't do that. Everybody contributed. It was truly a team win. But I did find it interesting in the whole context of like turning the corner that the new guys just was like, no, we're not going to lose this game. And they did what was necessary to win that game last night. So that was also encouraging from that standpoint.
For sure. I totally agree that it was a true team win. I mean, if you look at the box score, like if you didn't watch the game, like you would see a lot of guys contributed to the success they had in Tuesday night's game. The one thing that I don't know if I am concerned about it or how I feel about it, but, you know, we probably should have a conversation about Clay Holmes.
Yeah, for sure.
The one thing that has been on my mind with Holmes and watching it in Tuesday's game is basically all of his bad outings are the exact same. It's he does his job with limiting hard contact, and the contact that he is getting is so soft that they're just like finding holes or it's an infield hit. I don't know. Like I asked Boone about it pregame. It's like, is there anything defensively that you can do moving forward to kind of mitigate the quote unquote bad luck that Holmes is getting? And he joked like, you know, maybe if we put like a 10th or 11th guy out there, it'll make a difference. Right. You know, like in Tuesday's game, basically like all the contact that Philly got off of him were just dribblers or bloops or whatever. I don't know how you can fix that, but also that's kind of what Holmes is. And right. Sometimes that happens because batted ball luck is a thing. BABIP is a thing. You know, we saw that with Anthony Volpe for 2+ months of him just trying to find holes and he couldn't find holes. But sometimes, like, you do find holes, or sometimes the contact is so soft that, you know, you do ultimately get on base. I don't know what they can do about it, you know, because he is doing his job technically. He is a contact right. pitcher. He is getting soft contact, but it's so soft that they can't do anything about it sometimes.
Right.
Is he the right – like, do you want that kind of profile as your closer? I don't know because, like, all like his numbers are good, but just watching the game, it's like I don't know if he's the right guy to have in the ninth inning,
right?
When you know the game is on the line or it's a close game and you don't have many other chances to try and come back and win. It's bizarre because I do like I know fans are pulling their hair out when like Boone says like I thought he pitched well. Like his stuff was there, like in last night's game, it's like I kind of agree with Aaron that like Clay did his job. The contact was just so soft. The wild pitch was obviously his fault, and that's bad. But the batted ball stuff, it's I don't know what you can do as a pitcher if you're just getting really weak hits. Basically, all of the hits or the basically all of the contact that Philly had, they had exit velocities of like under 70 miles an hour. Right. So he did his job. It just they found spots of the field that the Yankees weren't at, and they couldn't turn double play. Glaber bobbled the ball at second. I think Austin Hayes would have beat out the throw. He was steps away. It would have been a close play, but I'm just thinking about like, is he the right profile of pitcher who you want closing games? I haven't made up my mind fully of whether I'm a yes or a no, but it needs to be noted that like all of Clay's bad outings happen the exact same way, where it's just really weak contact dribblers and there's really nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, I think if you were in an ideal situation, he wouldn't be the closer just because I think the propensity to give up runs because of that profile lends to the idea that you probably need more opportunities offensively to try to score runs yourself. But I don't think they have that option. Like there's no other option to be the closer for the 2024 Yankees. So I think you have to roll the dice and rely on your defense. And I think the play that kind of sums up the Clay Holmes closer experience was the Bryce Harper ground ball to first base that bounced off of LeMahieu that went to Glaber. Then Glaber got him out at first with Holmes covering. It just felt like that's the Clay Holmes closer experience in a nutshell, in one play. Like, it's just this could go one way or the other, and the game is hanging in the balance here. That this ricochet that's going to the second baseman that requires his throw on the run to the pitcher covering the base just encapsulates what every ninth inning is like with Clay Holmes. That it could go one way or the other just because he just cannot strike people out. And he's naturally going to give another team an opportunity to score a run just because he can't miss bats enough. So I think he's a really good pitcher. I think he, like you said, he plays to his skill set and does it well, but it's just he's miscast at this point. Every time he comes in, the other team is going to have an opportunity to score. And it's not even necessarily like his fault. Some of it is just baseball. And that play last night with LeMahieu, Glaber, and Holmes is the perfect example of that. There is no way that you can anticipate a play like that being the difference between a win or a loss. And if you have a strikeout guy, the chances of that happening or that play taking place is minimal compared to a guy like Holmes. We see it all the time. And also, I will say, the defense needs to play better behind him. He's been let down by the defense a couple times now. So if he does his job, the rest of the guys have to execute. And I'm not like defending Holmes. I'm not trying to like explain these performances away. But if he's in there, the defense has to like help him out. Like that's just how this goes with when he pitches. You know, you can't face plant in left field. You can't bobble a routine ground ball that ends the game in Baltimore. You know what I mean? You have to make a clean play at second base. Like you just have to like execute better defensively to help him out because the ball's going to come to you. The ball's going to find you when Holmes is there, especially in the infield. So I think if they had another option, he probably wouldn't be the closer, but there's nobody there. So you're going to have to like live and die with it and see what you can get done in the off season, but I don't think they have an option. So in a universal context, he's probably better suited as a setup guy. So you have more chances to score runs if he does give up some runs. But I mean, unless you're going to put Leiter as your closer, I have no idea who, or I wouldn't put Weaver there. So I don't know who you would put in his place.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's not a better option because Weaver's kind of the same. He's had better results than Holmes, but he's also someone who mostly pitches to contact like Holmes. It's harder contact, but, you know, he is someone who pitches to contacts. He can get strikeouts, but that's just not his profile. Leiter, we don't know how he's going to fit in with New York. You know, he does have the stuff to be a closer at some point because he has strikeouts and he has a high ground ball rate like Clay Holmes. So it's certainly possible that he could be an option. But again, there's just not a great option available. So I suspect that Holmes will continue being the closer moving forward, and they're just going to have to hope that luck starts going his way rather than the opposite way.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really a conversation that begins and ends with that. There just isn't another option. Like, there's nobody to really turn to. So, you know,
I certainly can see in October when we're talking after a game where the same issue creeps up and they lose a playoff game. Like, I wouldn't be stunned that happens just because of the fact that this is what you have in your closer who gives up contact and sometimes you can't control where, not sometimes, you cannot control where the ball goes. So it would not stun me at all if they end up losing a playoff game because Holmes allows contact and this is just what you have to live with.
I mean, it wouldn't stun me if the Yankees' playoff chances hinge on their pitching staff, period. I mean, the offense has had terrible moments, but there's enough talent and generational talent in the lineup to come through in the playoffs, presumably. To me, it's the pitching staff. Like, everything is going to come down to, can their pitchers execute when they need to execute in the playoffs? And I think one thing that does work to their advantage is I don't see many lineups that out of the playoff contending teams that you go into a series and you're like, oh man, like this is going to be like a really tough matchup. You know, I think that there's a handful in the AL, like, you know, depending on how Cleveland plays their platoons. I personally don't think that works. That's a very like Raysian thing. And it like never works in the playoffs. Boston, I keep saying, like, unless you have power guys, it's not going to matter. Like, that go-go athletic running the bases thing is not going to work in the playoffs in modern-day baseball. The Mariners don't really have a lineup that imposes you. It's really just Baltimore. So
I would put Houston in there. If Houston is on, I don't think you can discount them. They do have a lot of good talent in their lineup.
They do, but I think with their pitching staff, they're going to have to score a lot of runs.
I agree with you. But I'm just saying, with like just from a lineup perspective, I do have a lot of talent.
Yeah, no, that's a good call. So it's Houston and Baltimore, basically. So the other teams in the field, Minnesota, okay, maybe Royce Lewis gets like nuclear, which he's more than capable of doing, and then that changes the equation. But I still think you can pitch to that lineup. Seattle, same thing. Cleveland, the same thing. Kansas City, the same thing. Boston, the same thing. You know, it's like, it's really just two teams that in the AL that you really, I think, and you're going to see one of those teams, I feel like. It's going to be one of them. And maybe the way it shakes out, it's both of them. But I do think this is going to come down to how the pitching holds up in the playoffs. So. All right, so we're going to go to break because Chris has to go and do his job and speak with Brian Cashman. And then I'll be back after this break with the mailbag. All right, and I'm back. I would normally say we, of course, but it's just me now. So I'll hop into the mailbag. First question, Derek Gowan. Couple questions here. Do we see more of Will Warren this year? Why is Boone the only one who doesn't see DJ as washed? Does Jazz ever get moved to leadoff? Does Jason come back after a few rehab games? And who does he replace? Okay, so Will Warren, I thought, as Chris mentioned, he definitely represented himself well last night against the Phillies. I think he's kind of put himself as a as an option that can be looked at and considered. He just got demoted, though, or set down. I don't want to say demoted because it's not like he was punished or anything, but he was sent down for Ron Marinaccio, so we won't see him for a little while unless there's an injury to the pitching staff. But I do think that Warren has shown that he can get major league hitters out. Small sample size, obviously, but he went up against like a fantastic lineup, and I think he represented himself well. Made a couple mistakes, but that's to be expected from a rookie in his debut. But I do think that we will see Warren again. I definitely think he's getting called up in September, and they will use him, presumably out of the pen, but we'll see how that works out roster-wise. But I do think we'll see him again. Why is Boone the only one who doesn't see DJ as washed? I mean, he's the manager of the team. He's not going to throw his guys under the bus, and he's available on the roster, and you have to use players that are there. We all can see it. I know Boone can see it. He's a baseball lifer. He knows more baseball than all of us. But he's available on the roster, and I do think that as someone that has been around baseball for so long, he really is committed to the idea of playing to the baseball card and believing that there's still some skill set left where he can contribute in certain ways. At least defensively, he can contribute. So if he's available, he's going to use the guys that he has to his disposal. I don't think he's going to get a lot of playing time, and I don't think it's really going to matter as much now with the addition of Jazz and the way that the bench has kind of been deepened with that move. So I think we'll see DJ, but I don't think we'll, unless an injury takes place, I don't think we'll see him nearly as much as we did for a long period of time. Does Jazz ever get moved to leadoff? Maybe, but I mean, if he's hitting home runs at this clip, he's addressing the larger issue with this team, which is, to me, the middle of the lineup. I know the statistics show certain things about the leadoff spot, and you want to get people in front of Soto and Judge. Soto and Judge are going to get on base anyway. Who knocks in Soto and Judge? To me, that's the difference. And I think Jazz being in the middle of the lineup has already shown the importance of having the middle of the order get fortified. So I wouldn't move Jazz. I think he's in the right spot. If Jason ever comes up and is healthy, put Jason in the leadoff spot at a certain point once he gets his feet wet. I mean, I think Jazz is in the perfect spot, and I think Boone, to his credit, was right. Jason, I don't know what their plan is with him. He is going to have to show that he can stay healthy, play full games, play full back-to-back games. So I think it's going to take a little while. I think he has to show health and be able to bounce back, and the way that the team is going right now, they don't need him necessarily right this instant. I think that they will add him at some point, but I think they need to take their time. I mean, he's coming off Tommy John and a significant oblique injury. You know, I think we need to give him some grace and make sure he's ready to go. As to who he replaces, we're just going to have to find out. I know that's like a cop-out answer, but they have a tricky roster decision to make, and I'm not sure the answer is obvious to us at this moment. And let's see what's happening when he actually does get the call up. Thank you for the question. Anashe Mapuranga. Hey, Chris and Randy. Love the show. Keep doing what you're doing. My question is, in your opinion, when the rotation has Clark back in the mix, who's the last starting pitcher you would want to depend on come playoffs? In my opinion, it'd be Stroman because his command this year is shaky. He gets barreled a lot, unlike previous years, has a home run problem, and unlike most other pitchers in the rotation, lacks whiff and put away pitches. Coupled with other bad peripherals while overperforming his ERA, Rodon has a worse season, has been more rough the past month or so, but has shown he can generate whiff and Ks at a great rate and has arguably had his best starts as a Yankees in his last two. With extremely encouraging results that might indicate he could still be an effective pitcher, while I haven't seen any of that from Stroman. I would say Stroman or Nestor. I think Nestor and Stroman are in the race right now for worst starter in the rotation, to be quite honest. I think all the things that you mentioned about Stroman can be true for Nestor. I don't think either guy can really get a ton of swing and miss. The thing I would lean more towards Nestor, though, because he gives up the long ball. Stroman's ground ball rate is still pretty good, which fits his profile. And I know he's given up some home runs, but like if Nestor misses, he's going to give up a home run or loud contact. He's not really a ground ball guy. He's more of a fly ball pitcher. So I think if you're thinking about the playoffs, you don't want to give up slug. So I would say Nestor is actually the guy that I'm more concerned about, just because when he makes mistakes, which has been happening a lot, they go very far. And at least Stroman can get the ball on the ground, which, you know, and then you're relying on your defense and you can kind of outperform your expected ERA and expected stats in that manner, because your defense can help you out. Nobody's going to defend a home run. So I would say Nestor, but I totally get what you're saying about Stroman. Clay Holmes. Hey guys, I'm not a person to overreact to a couple of bad outings. I'm really not. But after 6 weeks of almost unbelievably unreliable outings, is there a chance Holmes loses the closer spot? Even if it's just a temporary measure to get him back in his early season groove, or will it just be more he's going to turn the corner soon stuff? Dig the pod. Thanks, Dan from the South Bronx. So we spoke about this in the last segment, but I wanted to honor Dan's question. I don't think you have an option. Who's the closer? You know, even in the email, there's no suggestion about who can replace him. Not to say anything about Dan, not to say that he should have one. He's not the manager, but who replaces him? You know, who's the temporary replacement that you feel confident can get three outs in the ninth? I don't think that there's a guy. Luke Weaver, we mentioned, he also gives up home runs. Clay Holmes generally does not. I think Holmes is the closer. We talked about it in the last segment. I don't think that there is a viable option, even in a temporary capacity. We don't know what Leiter can do in New York. I think they're stuck. And I think there are some bad outings that Clay has had, and you can tell when he's walking a lot of people and his command is all over the place. But I mean, generally over 6 weeks, I think he's done enough to like get the job done. It's just weird baseball stuff where his defense let him down, or he gave up some hard contact on the ground that went in the right spot. I think we're just going to have to live and die by Clay Holmes, the closer, and hope that it works out. So not the answer you're probably looking for, but I'm not really sure what the other options are. And it's very clear that Boone is committed to Holmes, because I think he sees and the organization sees what we're talking about, both in terms of options and like how the games have played out. You know, that's just his profile. You're going to live or die by that profile. Brian Restuccia. Hey, fellas, can't wait to hear your opinions on the Yankees trade deadline moves. Looking at the numbers, Leiter is more of a swing and miss guy over Holmes. Can you see him as a closer and Holmes being a part of the bridge to get to him? No, not yet. I mean, he just got here. Got to see how he performs. Got to see how he can handle those situations in New York as a Yankee. Way too early to consider Leiter as a closer option. I mean, I know that there's a lot of Holmes questions, especially off of what happened yesterday. But, yeah, I mean, it's Holmes for now. And we're just going to have to live with it and hope that things work out. And then if, as the season progresses, if things change, then they're going to have to consider options, but I don't think that's happening right now. Leiter literally just got here and got off the plane and threw an inning and, you know, is having a whirlwind experience right now. So I don't think you can put that on his plate when it's a role that he's never had before. You know, I think we have to give some patience here, even though, like, I understandably get people's calls for Holmes to be removed or concerns with Holmes. I get it. You know, we talked about it. It's legit. It's a valid question, but again, there's no immediate option to replace him. So got to roll with it. So yeah, thank you guys for all the questions. Chris had to go off and do his job and speak to Brian Cashman and be able to provide you guys with great info. But, thank you for listening to the podcast. We really appreciate it. Great time for the Yankees. They're starting to, play a little bit better. Jazz Chisholm has made a great impact. Mark Leiter already made a nice impact. We'll see what De Los Santos does when he gets to the team. Have faith. You know, they're playing better. They're starting to look like the team that we recognized in the first half. I don't think they're all the way there yet. I don't think they've turned the corner. I think we need to see more. But to beat Boston in that series and to beat Philly in Philly and in Boston over the last two series is really encouraging. So let's see if they can keep it up. Let's see if they get the sweep today. But yeah, things are starting to look better, but we're going to wait and see if this is going to be a return to their first half performance. So thank you for listening to the pod. We hope you enjoyed it. You can find us on all of your favorite podcast platforms. Please subscribe. You can find us on YouTube in the same name. We will be back next week and we will speak to you then.